Hello, everybody. I guess, hello, everybody. Now we're live. All right. So you got to click that button twice. So good to be here with you today. I see people from Bangladesh, from Sweden, from the UK. We've got people in here from Jerusalem. Awesome. And Denmark. Excellent. Excellent. Free Gonzalo Lira. Yes. He, if you don't know, he got picked up by the SBU. Kind of risky what he was doing, being in Ukraine, talking reasonable. That's no bueno in a non-democratic fascist country like that. So I don't get in trouble for saying that, but they suspended elections. They suspended political parties. They've suspended certain religions. They've suspended certain languages. Doesn't sound very democratic to me, the way I understand it. Hi, Evie. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you? Well, I'm pulling myself together here.
Why are you pulling yourself together?
Oh, you know, I get a little anxious before we do this sometimes because I'm so shy.
Because you're shy, I know.
I have to pull myself outside of my shell. So
yeah,
bear with me.
All right. So, well, last week we were down in Texas. That's why we didn't have this live cast last week. And we were with the FLCCC, which is the doctors like Pierre Corey, Paul Merrick, the frontline COVID critical care. These are the people who really put their lives and their jobs on the line and have been doing such great work. Great organization. I'm on the board there. And so we had a great board meeting, but they also had a 2-day science conference. And that was wild because that was my first time really interacting with a lot of people who have the holy shot injury, and also doctors who specialize now. The suite of complications. It's not a long COVID like the other injury thing that's hard to talk about. That's not a single thing, like saying I had an ischemic heart attack. That's a very narrow syndrome. A number of things can happen, but this thing around long COVID and the other thing, it's a huge syndrome. It's got immunological components. It's got cancer components. It has heart components. It has neurological components. It reflects differently across different people. It tends to activate and fire up latent, underlying, long dormant, other viral syndromes like cytomegalovirus, et cetera, et cetera. Very complicated.
Yeah. How do they find that out? I mean, are people presenting with challenges that they suspect are connected? Like syndromes that they're like, I believe this happened after, you know.
Well, it's tough. So people who had like something that happened, like let's just so I can, you know, stay on air. If you got COVID and you never quite got better, like it's pretty obvious you were fine. Then you had this sore throat, then you had this pounding headache, and then you had this long drawn out, maybe even with lung complication thing. And you never quite came back from that. And it's just been a shit show ever since. Right. So if you have that temporal association, but other people had things that didn't start on until weeks or even months later, and then they would come on quite often in the context of a third. The boosters were highly correlated with these things coming on. So, and then it's mixed up too. It's tricky, right? So is it, if you had COVID and then you had three of these? But also which version, because Alpha was different. Delta was totally different. Nothing like Omicron. In fact, Omicron B and A. So it's a very complicated.
Yeah, it sounds like a complex landscape.
Yeah, that's what it is. All right. So today we're going to be talking about, I want to talk about liberals versus conservatives. By the way, this is our new Peak Prosperity gear. And I've got the new logo on here. And what we would love is for you to get some gear if you want some. You can find that at Peak Prosperity. Why? Because we love having this. This is how we get the common knowledge thing. When people see this out in the wild, they come up and talk to each other. And that's how we find each other. In fact, remember, Evie, had this guy come up after I was wearing it on the plane. And he came up afterwards and he's like, oh my God, I love Peak Prosperity. And took him a good 60 seconds to realize it was me.
I know.
Remember
he? I think he was old school too. Like, I think he had listened to you back before even. You know, a lot of people, you're just audio only. Like back in the day when you used to do featured voices and all those different interviews and stuff. Yeah, that was great. It's fun to meet people who are like-minded. It's such a refreshing change to walk up to somebody and to feel like your ideas and your thoughts are welcome, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Feels good.
Hey, look at all these people from Sweden today. Hey, shout out to all the people from Sweden. See the squarehead, Martin's son. If anybody has any, like, you know, lineage on where my family might have come from, all I know is my grandfather came over in 1918 at Ellis Island from somewhere in Sweden. That's all I know. And I haven't, he died before I was able to get family history. I was 12. He was actually my dad in this story. Yeah. He was the one. So, let's see here. I'm going to go now.
Hey, what's on your mind?
Oh.
What's on your agenda, I should ask?
What makes you think I have an agenda?
Oh, I don't know. Hmm? You just seem to build these in your sleep.
Yeah?
Yes.
You think so? She's right. Okay. It's like knitting. I have a pattern in my head. I have a thing. So I want to talk about this. And that rebuildables. So we might get to rebuildables. I want to talk about this, about liberals versus conservatives. So we've been talking about this for a while, right? Which is the whole idea that there's a mind virus, is how it's been put. And so the idea of a mind virus is that there's a way of thinking that comes in and includes all other types of thinking. So I'm calling it a mind virus because it seems to wreck people's abilities to reason. And it makes these disconnections that, frankly, I don't understand. And they're very profound. And I worry very much about how that mind virus is a liability at this moment of human history, right? So what do we need more than anything right now? We need to rally together. We need to be inclusive, not divisive. And of course, it sounds divisive when I accuse people of having a mind virus, right? So get back on the reservation, big guy. But I'm very worried about, you know, if it's kind of like, look, when I was running a company, if you had somebody who is just very tactical and you need tacticians, you know, they're super good at executing, getting stuff out the door. But if you suddenly handed them a project where they were responsible for the company's strategy, bad match. They don't have the mind set for that. Vice versa. You take somebody who's really dreamy, great strategist, thinks things through like crazy, but just honestly doesn't like finishing stuff or getting it done. Bad match. So I'm worried that we have some people who are very bad matches for where we are at this point in history. All right. So that's the framing for this.
Wonderful. Let's go.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like, have we ever talked about this before?
Maybe. No, this is new.
Yeah, right. All right. So let's talk about this. So we're going to do this in the context of this little thing right here. Okay. This is, so if you don't know, Jordan Neely is a homeless person who died after being placed in a chokehold, as you can read there. That was one of the many things that this mentally ill person was sort of shouting out. And of course, we can look at this from a number of directions in this particular story, but, we could tackle it from the mental health angle. Mm-hmm. We could ask the question, why are so many people mentally ill right now? Which could get us into the foods and toxins we feed to ourselves, which I don't know if there's more or less mentally ill people, but certainly we don't house them anymore. We just sort of throw them onto the streets and hope for the best and then ask our police to deal with them, which is often not the right answer, right?
No. And it'd be interesting to get into that a little bit, just in terms of conservative versus liberal and what that means, what our patterns of thinking and belief systems are. So I think there's some interesting clues in there.
Yeah, and we could talk about this from the angle as well of how much trauma we have in our society.
Yes.
And how people, you know, get to the point of being, you know, with such unresolved PTSD and other neuroses that it coalesces into a larger constellation of mental illness. We could talk about what a poor job we do actually treating the underlying root causes. Yep. Of mental illness. Oh, here's some pills. Cover that, cover it up, you know, yep. Right? All of that. So we're not going to take it at that level at first. We're going to start here and we're going to go down. There's a really interesting direction I want to go, but just so we're all on the same page, what we got here, this tragic ordeal began, they say here, when 30-year-old Neely, dressed in dirty sweatpants and a stained white t-shirt, not sure what those have to do with anything, barged into the northbound subway car after the doors opened at the 2nd Avenue. This is in Lower Manhattan, just before 2:30 on Monday. He immediately began tossing garbage around, yelling at frightened riders, which is an all too common experience these days, you know, for people on subways.
Yeah. Is it happening a lot?
Yeah. And worse, I think you have to be on guard when you're down. You don't want to be panicked all the time, but I mean, we've seen enough where there's random stabbings, random shootings, muggings, standard robberies, people getting pushed onto train tracks. I mean, it's just like, you know, when you're around, if you're around people who you fundamentally don't trust, mm-hmm. you're slightly on edge. That's true. You just have to block it out and pretend it's not happening. But, you know,
which I think is most people probably do that. You know, if you're around that all of the time, you sort of have to learn how to not react to everything. Be on high alert every single moment.
So they say he started screaming in an aggressive manner. A witness, Juan Alberto Vasquez, recalled, he said he had no food, he had no drink, he was tired, he doesn't care if he goes to jail. So he's just this guy screaming. He took his jacket off, he threw it on the ground. Anyway, as it happened, at some point, a gentleman came up behind him, took him to the ground and chokehold, applied the chokehold a little too long, and he died. All right, so we're going to talk about that, but I want to talk about this in the context of this really fascinating study that came out, because I think we have to begin to understand and map out the differences. And there are real differences between, and I'm going to call it liberal versus conservative, because this is the language they're using, but I don't think left-right so much. But at any rate, this is interesting. So let's look at this study real quick. All right, so this is in Nature, came out in 2019, and it's a review. So they reviewed 7 studies, and they looked at them and analyzed them. And ideological differences, they say, in the expanse of the moral circle. Interesting title. Here's the abstract. It says, do clashes between ideologies reflect policy differences or something more fundamental? The present research suggests they reflect core psychological differences such that liberals express compassion towards less structured, more encompassing entities. That's it. They're calling this universalism. Whereas conservatives express compassion towards more well-defined and less encompassing entities, which they call parochialism. I think we can already see the setup here in framing. Universalism versus parochialism. I'm detecting a slight bias, so we're going to put our bias filter glasses on as we read this, okay?
I always hear that in regards to like a parochial school.
Yeah.
So that's what it makes me think
of. Oh, that's so like, parochial.
It's like a fundamental.
Yeah, I always hear, where I grew up, that was a little bit of a put down.
Was it a dig?
Yeah, that was a little bit of a dig. Don't you think?
Yeah. I can see how it might be.
You know? Oh, parochial. That's so parochial. That feels a little.
So mainstream of you or so. I'm curious about what the.
Limited. If it sounds limited or limiting to me, I think.
What the definition actually is. I'm not. Totally
I would have to look
clear.
That up. Anyway, they're just reporting on some things here. So what do they got here? The studies show that liberals relative to conservatives express greater moral concern toward friends relative to family and the world relative to the nation. So that's liberals, friends over family, world over nation. So it's out there versus in close.
Yep, that makes sense.
Friends over family, world over nation.
Yep. You know, I feel like I can speak to this just based on my own experience, which if that's interesting later on, I can.
What is your experience?
Drop more things. Well, I feel like I grew up in a very liberal, in some ways, a very liberal family. Like that's where I came from. And my life back then was just completely insane and chaotic, and I was very fractured in that life, and I had sort of, and it's all also my nature to be this way. I tend to be drawn to the essence of something rather than like all of the factual details, which is why I think we balance each other out. And in regards to this, I can relate to that because I think that's where I've come from, and now I find myself in a much different place where I feel, because I'm grounded and safe and secure, you know, in our connection and in my relationship to this land and our vision for it together, I feel differently and I'm acting differently. And my whole mindset has changed over the years. I think it is possible that you go from one end to the other.
From liberal towards conservative?
Mm-hmm. Don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Pro tip, gentlemen, find a woman who cares about the essence more than your details.
I don't know.
Works for me. All right. So, but this is, well, this is fascinating because you actually grew up in a really religious conservative household, right? So,
right. Sort of.
Very fundamentalist in a way, right?
It was. It was. And yet, I mean, my family always voted Democrat. So for whatever it's worth, that's what Democrat yep. used to mean or yeah. conservative used to mean, right? And I feel like our definitions have all shifted.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm so old that I remember when a liberal Democrat was anti-war, anti-giant corporation,
yep.
anti sort of like structural unfairness, right?
Right. Yep.
You know, those sorts of things.
Exactly. I remember that too.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened. That's why this.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
It's a weird conversation on some level.
Yeah.
Because right. we've all probably been labeled being in a camp that, you know, may yeah. really not resonate with.
So interestingly, these other studies then demonstrate, let me get the drawn tool out because I love this part here. And can you monitor the comments just to
sure.
Demonstrate these universalist versus parochial differences extend toward simple shapes depicted as proxies for loose versus tight social circles. So we'll talk about what that means. So using stimuli devoid of political relevance, so that's what they did. They tried to strip out politics, right? So this isn't, you know, trying to decode this through lenses of right. partisan politics as best they could. I guess demonstrated relevance demonstrates that the universalist parochialist distinction does not simply reflect differing policy differences. So they indicate that these universalist versus parochial, liberal versus conservative tendencies extend to human versus non-humans more generally, demonstrating breadth of these psychological differences. So we'll get into this. There's just three charts and then a graph that I think just drives us home. So here's one. So they say, okay, here's a difference. You can see the range of response is quite wide. But generally speaking, you can see that love of family sort of trends from the very liberal. So we won't go from very liberal, to slightly liberal, to moderate, slightly conservative, conservative, very conservative. You can see that this love of family, this red line, trends up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like that. Okay. And then love of friends, right? Kind of flat all the way through. Starts here, finishes here. It's a little flat. I don't see a lot of movement to that. But love of all others starts high on very liberal and trends down just a little bit. But I got to be honest, these aren't huge differences. But you see this love of family, love of friends, love of all others. You can see at least love of family versus love of all others. Let me back those up. You can see there's a slight crossing there of the blues and the reds.
Do we know more about the scale of how they're...
No, the ratings.
Like what this rating means?
No.
Okay, because I don't know exactly. I find this slightly hard to like...
All right.
Extrapolate.
Well, but let me go on one. So okay. Now we're getting to a clearer difference here, right? Mm-hmm. And again, I don't know what this rating means. I don't know. But identification with community, slight upward slope here, going from liberal to conservative, right? But look at this. Identification with country, very clear slope. Whoop, goes up that green line.
Interesting.
And then blue, identification with all humanity. So here you can see a very clear difference between very liberal to very conservative.
Yeah.
So let's think about what that means for a minute. When you are identifying with community versus identifying with humanity, all of humanity. So it's kind of interesting because to me, it's are you going to try and solve things from the outside in?
Mm-hmm.
Or the inside out? Are you going to approach things from the top down
mm-hmm.
or from the bottom up, right?
Yeah.
And so I think this chart here, what this is saying is, aha. So this is what confused me because the liberals in my, what we just talked about in my life,
mm-hmm.
your life, right, went from not believing in the man, mm-hmm. corporations, not trusting the FBI,
yep.
you know? The CIA, to all of a sudden flipping that. And now the liberals, so-called, the progressives, are 100%
yep.
on the side of trusting big government and
big pharma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, these 50 intelligence agents decided to, you know, say that the Hunter Biden laptop was fake, you know,
yeah.
And they just believe that. And so it suddenly, it's weird, but that's because it's top down, and top down matches authoritarian tendencies. So if we were going to say which of these two groups would map into wanting an authoritarian response, it's clearly the very liberal people.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're identifying not with country, they're identifying with all of humanity. And of course, the core of the authoritarian is you have a utopian ideal, outside in, top right. down.
Well, this is related to what I was trying to say a few minutes ago, where I feel like I can relate in terms of my past to this, because when I was in my early 20s, after going through all of the trauma that I did, I ended up almost having like a spiritual bypass of sorts, where I went in.
What do you mean?
Well, I was looking for things that I could find solace in and healing. And one of those things was to sort of go into that spiritual place where I was like in prayer, I was needing help. I was in a space of almost disconnecting from my physical life because it was so painful, right?
Mm.
So I was living in here. And living in like a ethereal sort of not physical world. I don't know how else to put it, but I feel like in some respects that made me feel, it comforted me, but I was less connected to everyone and everything around me. Do you know what I mean? So I can see how caring for humanity, it's this generalized feeling. It's maybe if you don't have a family that you feel super close with, it's the next best thing, or maybe the only thing you can bond with. So I think it could be related to trauma on some level.
But think about that friends over family, right?
Mm-hmm.
It fundamentally, like this is where I feel bad for people who have extensive, like they've placed all their... They've put it all on the outside, because when you put it on the outside, then it's more about appearances. It's more about you're only one bad mistake away from being excommunicated or shunned from that circle, you
right.
know, because it's outside. You know, what is it you really get to hold on to?
Yeah.
You know, what's your ground? What's your firmament? So at any rate.
You put it so well. It's hard for me to explain.
Well, check this out.
In like a sentence.
Now we're up to the stark difference in this, and then we're going to get to the killer graph.
The crux.
All right. It just explains it all.
Good.
So let's look at this stark difference we got here. Human to non-human, right? And so this is the personal moral allocation to humans and non-humans. Very clear that there's sort of an even balance between the two here down at the very liberal side, but then we get this big departure, and it couldn't be more obvious. Look, these dots and these dots do not even overlap. So this is pretty obvious what's happening here, right?
Wow. That is interesting.
So that's interesting, because one of the things that's caught me all over time is this has been the confusing part. Remember, we've talked about this a number of times where the question is, why is it that certain people, particularly in what we'll call progressive or liberal side, seem not to understand consequences,
mm-hmm.
cause and effect,
mm-hmm.
that there's, you show me the incentive, I'll show you the outcome.
Yeah.
They don't get it. It's like San Francisco leadership's like, they care so much about other. We're going to give $983 a month to homeless drug addicts. Hey, why are there all these homeless drug addicts showing up and making trouble for us in our city? Like they can't connect that, because their right. first instinct, which is a good instinct. So I want to help people.
Right.
But because they don't do the human part is strongly, it's more abstract. The human part seems to evade them. So they're coming from a very human place, but the outcomes of what they're doing, the consequences are not mapping back
right.
to the instinct.
Yep.
If that makes sense.
No, that does make sense. I was about to ask if there was like, if you look at that graph, if there's a masculine feminine side, like people just do things differently, you know?
Mm.
Like, I think more of the essence of something. You're great at looking at details. I can also look at it like that. And your brain can do the reverse. You know what I mean? But everybody has a specific sort of baseline strength. And I wonder if that's part of what we're seeing here, because it's interesting how it is bifurcated like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to ask, like, what's the reason for this? Nature must have a reason, even if we don't understand what it is.
It's true. No, there is. It viva la difference. So before we go there, there is a burning thread going on about,
oh, yeah.
What are you knitting?
Oh, I don't know yet. I just started again. I had another pattern. Chris has been watching me knit it every night, but it was too hard to be on here live and keep with the pattern because I needed to look at something and pay attention. So
yeah, you got a simple knit going.
I'm starting it. Yeah, I'm just starting another. I think I'm going to make a hand towel again because I'm learning a lot of new stitches right now. So it gives me like almost a swatch to be able to practice the stitch and pattern and see what I feel like doing.
All right.
But thank you for asking. I will do a show and tell if it seems appropriate. Yeah.
All right. Okay. So remember, we have a difference here, slight. We have a clear difference here, which is about identification with community versus country versus all humanity, right? So it's kind of like
mm-hmm.
my community versus my country versus all of humanity, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So trust me, I'm totally going somewhere with this eventually. Are you going somewhere?
You do.
Yes, I am. So this is cool. So these are conservatives here on the left. These are liberals here on the right. And they've mapped this out. If you can't see it well, there's 10 concentric circles coming in from the outside in, and they're labeled one on the outside, 10 on, one on the inside, 10 on the outside. So let's carry it through. So let's look here first before we interpret what these color heat maps actually mean. So from inner to outer, note the first one is the very center of this, the bullseye would be all of your immediate family. So they're mapping here, where does your moral center of gravity hang, right? Mm-hmm. So if you had to pick, or if you got to vote across all 10 and you gave each one like its own score, where does it land? And so it turns out for conservatives, number one is all of your immediate family. Two is your extended family. So that's just that little red, it's like about the years, like two, right? Three is all of your closest friends. Four, again, heading out the circle, is all of your friends, including distant ones. Five is now we're up to acquaintances. So now we're about halfway out this circle here. Six is all the people you ever met. Seven is all the people in your country. Eight, all the people on your continent. Nine, all the people on all continents. 10, all mammals. 11, all amphibians, reptiles, mammals, fish, and birds. I'd have a heavy weighting there, by the way, personally.
I know you would.
12 is all animals on Earth, including Paramecia and amoeba. Ooh.
Hmm.
13 includes all animals in the universe, including alien life forms. Interesting. 14 rings out. We have all living things in the universe, including plants and trees. I don't know why plants and trees come after aliens, but okay. 15, all natural things in the universe, including inert entities such as rocks. And then 16, all things in existence.
Oh, my chart would be bizarre, too.
It'd be...
I love rocks. I love geology. So.
Well, isn't this cool? So when they do the heat map on this, then
yeah. You
see very clearly conservatives are very heavily clustered down here, about to maybe ring 7 or 8 or so.
Okay.
And liberals are heavily weighted way out here.
That's so interesting.
That's rings, you know.
It's
looks
hard
like
to see those little numbers.
It is, but I'm going to say that's basically ring 10 and out is where the center of gravity is. And for conservatives, it's ring 6 and in. So that's why you get that big stark difference.
Yeah.
So again, just massive, massive differences.
So interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The human brain.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably why it also lends itself to like certain jobs, right? Like if you think about the types of jobs that are considered liberal, you know, mm-hmm. or a liberal arts degree, mm-hmm. you're taught to think about these big chunky ideas that who knows how to, you know, actually, sorry, my brain's trying to find the word, how to execute those ideas, right?
Yep.
Like a lot of things that I remember learning in college in that realm were very sort of weighty and tough to grapple with. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
how do you take that and make a life out of it or make a skill set out of it, right? That study in general, when you're thinking about liberal arts, which I know is not exactly what we're talking about here, but it's just, it's fascinating. What do you guys think about it? I'm curious what our listeners think.
Yeah, there's some great comments going on there. Oh, hello from Poland. Hi, Poland.
Hello.
And
I can't see because this thing.
Yeah, hello from England. Hi, England. So this is how groupthink would take hold, says Erg. Yeah, so this is how groupthink takes hold here. So and that's exactly where I'm going with this is this idea of saying, because we're at this place, I started calling it a mind virus, but there's clearly a strain of thinking now that is out there that it's hard for me to understand because of how it flits about and it presents itself in moral terms, but I don't get those moral terms, right? Because it's like, wow, this one homeless person who died on this subway becomes then a metaphorical representative for something much, much bigger. And I would go, oh, well, then let's figure out how to solve that bigger thing. But then the conversation falls apart, right? Because it's my moral foundation would be, let's try and solve as many things for as many people as possible. Because here's where I think we can agree, myself and what I would call people who are on the other side of thinking about the Jordan Neely thing, is this. We both agree that a preventable, unnecessary death is a tragedy. I fully agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Where we disagree is in then applying that out into the world, because for me, I would rather say maybe we should put some focus on 100,000 unnecessary preventable deaths than this one over here, right? Because mm-hmm. so that's that. But so here's this is critical, because I think there really are. I you know what? I honestly think I started here. And I ended up over here over time.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the normal progression for humans?
Isn't that the saying?
Yeah.
About your heart when you're a liberal, blah, blah, blah.
What yeah. If you're not a liberal when you're young, you have no heart. And if you're not a conservative when you're older, you have no brain. Right?
There must be something to that.
Yeah. I forget who said that. Churchill, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I think you're right.
All right, so the reason this is important, though, maybe not, but here's how I'm connecting dots. So, is because if we're going to get to the essence of something, if we're going to make it through this next period of time, and by the way, just to be absolutely clear about this, this next unit of time, these next 7 years up to 2030, baby, it's going to be so hard.
It's
going to be so hard because we just came through this age of abundance and. We had all this oil and all this tasty high net energy stuff. And we got all this magic technology, which is allowing us to communicate with people across the world. It's amazing. It's complex. And it's so easy to be alive compared to 200 years ago, compared to 200 years from now, if I have my story right, you know?
Yeah.
And so we're at this really easy point, but we can feel it slipping away. And we have to be just clear-eyed and really objective. Not morally relative about this. We have to be objective and we have to do the greatest. We have to help the most people get through this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Not one individual gender conflicted child who we all have to like put all this extraordinary energy around managing that condition such as it is, rather than thinking about what are we going to do with tens of thousands of people who are about to slip into poverty. Because right. our money system's about to go kaput, right. or we're a little tight
on starving, or yeah,
we don't have the food we thought next year, or something like that, right? So all of that. So here's how it begins to tie together. So, all right, first a departure, okay? Because I think in long thoughts. All right,
go for it.
All right, so we've got to talk about fractals for a second. So a fractal. is a mathematical term. Benoit Mandelbrot, you know, brought them to life for us. This idea that a fractal is something where the smallest unit and the largest unit have this relevance to each other because things are built in a fractal nature. So the smallest is reflected in the whole is reflected in the small, and that's the universe we live in. So here's an example. This GIF is just showing us, you know, you can endlessly focus in and it will never resolve because it's just constantly, you know, there's no smallest resolution on this thing, right? Mm-hmm. It just no largest resolution, no matter where you scale on this shape, it always looks like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the nature of fractals. Okay, why am I bringing this up? Because it's important that we understand the universe we live in so that we can begin to understand. So there's a human universe, there's a natural universe, there's universal laws, there are things out there that we just observe and we just go, I don't know why it's this way, but it is, right? So we live in a universe that's defined by fractal rules, just is. So mm-hmm. nature's full of fractals. Like, you know, here's a couple fractals.
Ooh, I like that cauliflower.
Yeah. Right? We should grow that stuff this year.
I look for those seeds, but they're not easy to come by.
Those?
Yeah. It's a newer, like, hybrid. It's not an heirloom variety.
So the fractal meaning that you know, this tiny frondlet matches the shape of this frondlet, which matches the shape of this frond, and so on and so on. You could keep stacking those out, you know, ad infinitum, and that's just how it would look. Or each one of these little worlds represents this larger world, which represents the larger world. And so we live, right. These are fractals. So that's the universe we live in. It's how it's built.
Is that also related to like the Fibonacci, the golden rule and all of that sort of stuff, right?
Yeah. So Fibonacci series is an example of, you find the Fibonacci series everywhere in nature. It's all over the place.
So cool.
It just
really
is.
Beautiful.
It's everywhere. It's one of those rules. So for example, one of these is a subregion of the human brain and the other is a river delta seen from space.
I like that.
I just found those two examples.
Did you find them like together?
No, I had to go searching for them. That's where my brain goes.
Wow. Those are beautiful.
Aren't those?
Yeah.
So the one on the left, that's a river delta, and the one on the right is a region from the hippocampus. That's the subregion of your brain that stores memories. And so point being is that nature solves these things over and over again from the fractal. Like, how is it possible that a river delta and a little part of my brain resemble each other so closely? It's because there's some underlying force under there. There's a rule that's just being applied over and over at scale. That's the nature of the fractal, right? That makes sense.
Yeah. And it's in our blood vessels. It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
In our bone structure.
Yep. So, or this, right? One of these is a tree. The other is a river delta seen from space, right? So the tree branching and the river delta branching, one is formed of water and sand and mud and soil components. The other is living tissue built cell by cell. And somehow they end up branching and resembling each other really closely because, again, there's some underlying rule. There's some rule down there.
Yep.
So
I love that.
Where am I going with this? Okay. Here's where I'm going with this. I'm making the argument that what we need to consider is then that if there are these fundamental building blocks, you don't have to try and solve for how you get a river delta to look like that with massive engineering government programs and some NSA oversight, right? Mm-hmm. You just understand how that forms and you start at the small. So that it's the small that matters. It's making sure you're not violating the rule of nature,
mm-hmm.
right? Because the rules are already there. You just live with them or you don't, right? So we're about to discover physics matters when it comes to energy policy, right? We can wish and legislate, you know, as much as we want into existence, but it won't matter if we're fundamentally out of alignment with the laws of physics, which we are these days. It's getting bad.
Duncan said, as above, so below.
Exactly. As above, so below. And so this is just, it's just really, really, really important that we understand that the little things matter.
Mm-hmm.
They really do. Because look. This, if you could just meditate, I think, on just this one thing, right? This right here says a lot. And so I'm starting to gain my own faith that, you know, like somebody told me recently, a few years ago, that if you grow seeds, plant a seed in your garden, and it grows up, if you save that seed and replant it from that plant,
yep,
that over time, that plant develops very rapidly, within a few generations, develops a language with the local soil, mm-hmm. Not your New England soil, not your Massachusetts soil, not your Western Mass soil, not even your Chester soil, your soil, right? Because it's that precise. And of course it is, because it's mastered all these rules. So I don't have to be smarter than that, right? But again, if I had a national program where we all have to use these seeds that come from this one Monsanto source, and you get new seeds coming from here every year, we wouldn't be going through this exquisite process. So,
wow, that's a great point.
Yeah. Well, and we just got bees 2 weeks ago. And
yay.
Are you already in love with them?
Oh, I am. I'm really enjoying them. They're shockingly vibrant and alive, and they're taking full ownership of our fruit trees out there, and our blossoms and our busily.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to see them happy.
Yeah.
You want to read that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Why don't you read that one out?
Pontus Larson asks, what's your thoughts about the EU's okay for Netherlands farmers being exterminated by the state in the name of nitrogen?
It's complete BS. That is just one of the stupidest things I have heard. But of course, poor Netherlands, they are struggling under the fact that their leader, Mark Rutte, does not work for the people of the Netherlands. He has a different master that he serves. And so he's
what master is that?
Extraterritorial.
I wonder.
An extraterritorial master. Well, you know, is it Brussels? Is it, you know, Klaus? Whatever. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. So, yeah, no, that's really dumb. So if you look at, and by the way, someday I'm going to have to peel apart the whole climate change thing. And we can separate what the science is about that versus what the policy response is. It's very clear, leaving aside the science, the policy responses are clearly being used to figure out how to exert more control and extract more rent seeking behaviors, you know, out of the plebes, right? You know, mm-hmm. and getting, extracting more money. It's really bad. So it's just, that's hard. But when you look at the Netherlands, little tiny country, its total contribution to climate change, even tinier. And nitrogen's role in that, even tinier. There's like, it has nothing to do with anything. So that is complete junk. That what's happening right there. That
versus
is.
Versus the benefit of the food that they bring to the
entire
global system.
This would be a bad time to start limiting the food we bring into the world. Let's not do that.
On a related note, why is it that they've decided that, okay, so they buy out a farmer, blah, blah, blah. Why is it that they've decided that a farmer can't, you know, take that money and go purchase a different location and continue farming? That's what seems really odd to me.
Because they hate farmers? Or, hear me out. These are, Mark Rutte is part of that, this outside in, this, they think not about family, not even friends, not country. His caring, to be as polite as I can be, comes from really from the outside in, but it lacks this connection back to how stuff actually happens, right? It's just missing, there's a missing set of connections. Like this is the problem. It's too far to travel from way out here back in, because it's in the center where things really happen. So I submit to you that people who have been too disconnected from nature, too disconnected from actual work, too disconnected from the true means of production, too disconnected from what is actually real value, where does it come from? That there's an air gap here, right? Mm-hmm. They're way out here. There's a big old gap of air, and the reality's over here.
Sure. And that's why they probably defend it so vehemently, too. They're like, no, I am correct. You are wrong. You know,
well, it's moral. It's a moral crusade for them. Right.
It is.
So that's a problem. So that's why I built this thing around saying, OK, so let's understand there are these things called fractals. Let's pretend we're not smarter than billions of years of, you know, universe. Evolution and development and natural evolution and things like that. Let's pretend that we can see this pattern over and over and over again. So it's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's pretend that it operates at all different scales. and we can see that, and it's a thing, right? Let's pretend it doesn't matter whether we're comparing inorganic to organic things. It's a thing. So there's this universal law that says, okay, things start from the small and they go outward. So let me give you an example of where I think this breaks down. Here's a classic example. Ran across this today. David Axelrod, he's some sort of a pontificator kind of dude, responding here to this gunfire that just happened at this Texas outlet mall, displaying, I think, a very clear, this sort of morality sense. So he's way out here somewhere, and here's how it comes together. He says, we have completely jumped the shark as a nation. The world looks at us in absolute bewilderment as we slaughter each other with guns and throw our hands up in resignation. It's pathetic. And under that thread, he goes on to say, maybe it's time to have a complete relook at overturning the Second Amendment. Now, I'm over here going, that would be a very bad idea, because I'm over here looking at it from a completely different orientation. You know what I see? I see authoritarians who, in history, we call them world, let me this polite as I can be. They're not authoritarians. They're not fascists. They're world improvers with a dream. So they're dreamers. These dreamers, Pol Pot, Stalin, Mao, they have a long track record of wanting to do the right thing and to get us into some new utopian state of universal love and brotherhood. And they don't understand that you can't impose that from the outside in, that we live in this fractal universe. So they're trying to impose this vision. They have this crystallized view, and they want to just force that all the way down. But the problem is, if that's running against the native, it's like if I want that delta to only make cubic shapes, right? This would be an accident. This would be a mistake. Like imagine I only wanted, we have to make that delta only have straight lines. That, because we have this dream. We have this utopian dream. Think how much more efficient it'll be. And there won't ever be a little muddy eddy that buries fish eggs again accidentally. This will be perfect. It'll be beautiful. Mm-hmm. We just want this to be straight lines. The problem is you're not, it would be running against the true fractal nature of this. So here's David going, you know what? I demand complete safety. I want to make sure that we have no more instances of, you know, preventable unnecessary deaths, which David, you and I could agree on. If you can have an unnecessary preventable death, but again, at what scale? So this is the issue, right? So for me, trying to prevent one or two or five or even 10 preventable unnecessary deaths, which is the consequence of having guns in a society, mm-hmm. I have to scale that against, what does it mean though, when you look back historically and you see that the absence of guns has led to the loss of hundreds of millions of lives?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I hear you.
So where are you on this map, right? Where are you? So I get the utopian dream way out here, but the reality lives a little closer to back here. So that's how I'm.
No, that makes a lot of sense.
I'm hacking through this. I couldn't resist. What were you going to say?
Well, it's interesting because you were saying like the outside in, and he's thinking about how the world is looking at us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
he's
right.
Coming,
yeah,
from that, like, I wonder how I appear kind of a place.
Yeah, people are laughing at us. Oh my gosh.
Can't have that.
You're right. So that's a good point. So it's like, you know, when you have your externally focused and you've put your moral center out with not even country, but outside the country.
Right.
Yeah, that's what you get. At any rate, I tweeted back and I said,
oh no.
I have zero respect for people like David Axelrod who clamor for the complete safety at home. While they openly support the U.S. exporting military death to the rest of the world, it's the case of the bully who cries loudly at the prospect of being punched. It's morally and emotionally weak and without any respectable foundation. Hey, it's a risky world. Deal with it in its totality, or please take a seat. So these people drive me nuts, Evie.
Yeah.
These people who squawk and demand, like, you have to wear a mask. It's so we can't have one extra person die, because, you know, they have this really weird sense of they want to be completely safe, but they say nothing, zero, zippo, about the fact that the United States killed 1 million Iraqis over fake weapons of mass destruction. Like, yeah. What are you going to do?
Right? Yeah.
It's a scale thing, right?
Well, also a lot of people from the outside in, again, who are tweeting this stuff, feel like they want to have the moral high ground and they want to opine about this. But if you actually had, I bet you, a personal conversation with this individual, mm-hmm. you might find that he has none of what he's displaying here.
Oh, virtue signal? You think it's just a virtue signal? Could be.
Well, I just wonder. I mean, there's a lot we can't know, right?
Well, it could just be craven political nonsense, right? So this is craven political nonsense to me. Look at this language. So Jordan Neely was this homeless person we were talking about who was clearly, you know, deranged. And by the way, did I put it in here? I'm not sure I did. Let me see if I did. If I did, I hit it somewhere. Okay.
I swear your computer hides things on you.
It does sometimes. Yeah,
you're
no.
You're getting censored by your...
Well, not that it's totally relevant, but it's a little bit relevant. So the thing I forgot to put in here is that Jordan Neely had been arrested 40 times, had a warrant out for active warrant for his arrest as of February
23. Oh, wow.
So this year. And his most prior stint in jail was for sucker punching randomly a 65-year-old woman who was just standing in line. So he had violent tendencies, right? He
yep.
was clearly, you know, somebody who not only could present threateningly, but had been threatening.
Right.
Right. And so this idea that I think that you're supposed to just like wait for somebody to get stabbed and then react, you know, it's like, again, are you responsible for your own safety or is it the police? One layer out, like we have to vest that responsibility in a structure outside of ourselves.
Right.
So it's weird because, you know, when Trump was president, the progressives were all about defund the police.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go, oh, well, actually you should let the police kill the mentally ill homeless people because they do that all the time. That's fine. Right. It's just it's a strange thing.
It is. Well, have you ever noticed, too? I mean, a lot of what we're talking about in terms of liberal and progressives, that there are a ton of what I would consider to be liberals in cities, which is where you sort of, because you're living in this community, I think your understanding of where your personal boundaries are, what you have to defend and what you don't,
mm-hmm.
who's taking care of things, like you export your safety to the police, right?
Yep.
Whereas if you live in a rural area, you're like, yep. they won't make it here in time anyway. You know, I better figure out how to do this. I better figure out how to unlock my car door or whatever, right? So I'm wondering if it just seems like there's an interesting connection
yep.
between rural and urban.
Yep.
As well.
Hey, can you read that one in green?
Yep. I think we missed two other ones earlier, too. Sue Savan says, the unarmed people of the world that have the gun of the state pointed at their head look at us with envy, even after the events in Allen yesterday.
Mm. Yeah, I agree that it's very clear that if you have no ability to push back against a bully whatsoever, you're going to get bullied. And we're at the point of tyranny now. So you know
live
what?
By the sword, die by the sword.
So RFK throws his hat in the ring, right? And people
yep.
said, oh, but he's got these statements from 2018 that seem anti-Second Amendment. And I was like, well, hold up. Let's find out what he thinks. Because I personally have a whole handful, at least five, formerly very Democratic, liberal friends who are anti-gun, who've come all the way around.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Brett Weinstein.
We've seen it with our own eyes.
Right?
Yep.
He said, hold up. I'm still against, you know, random, stupid gun violence, but tyranny is now a larger concern for me.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent the Second Amendment provides some bulwark against that, then
mm-hmm.
that's the greater good in this story by far. Right. So it's a complex issue.
Yeah.
All of that. So at any rate, but look at this. Jordan Neely was murdered. So this is, you know, she's a sitting congresswoman. Murder is intent. First degree, second degree murder, intent.
Yeah.
So she's declaring here that this person who came up had intended to kill.
No,
right? You can't say that.
No.
That's not okay. Right? But look at this concern. And this is probably, I'm sure she's just, this is just political grandstanding. I consider her to be a political grifter of the highest order.
Yeah,
but to the extent this represents a real moral position of hers under here, Here's how it's framed. But because Jordan was houseless and crying for food. So that's what happened here. He was just a homeless guy crying for food. That's why he got killed. Mm. That's it. There was some hungry guy on the train who was like, you know what? This guy looks homeless and hungry. Time to kill. Right. That's her thesis. Right.
Okay.
We'll see if she's got any data to back that up here. In a time when the city is raising rents. Okay. The city doesn't raise rents. Okay. But
no.
Normally that's landlords. And stripping services to militarize itself. Whoa. While many that, by the way, that happened under Obama. Our police forces got militarized then most heavily. While many in power demonize the poor, the murderer gets protected with passive headlines and no charges. It's disgusting. Okay. So this.
She's generalizing and overgeneralizing.
Well, but also this is inflammatory, you know, yeah. Remember when they said, you know, free speech is everything except you can't yell fire in a crowded movie theater because you could cause greater harm because people would rush toward the exits and then more people would die, not less. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there are limits. There are very specific, very precise limits to free speech, which says if you're about to incite violence. So how is this not inciting violence? I mean, that feels very.
Yeah, she's not owning that it's her opinion. She's making a statement without saying, I feel, which I think is important.
Mm-hmm.
So she's saying it as if it's a known fact. Maybe that's the point of it, actually, is to put that out there like that. But I don't know. I find it interesting that she also isn't speaking to why there's a homeless person who's 30 years old who can't, you know, take care of themselves and their lives. What happened to them? What kind of mental health services are there? Why are we prescribing these things to people like SSRIs and things that completely disrupt the brain further and don't actually help you to get your mental health back? They sort of hold you at this precipice, you know, for a while, but your brain doesn't seem to heal, you know, while it's on them. And why are we not addressing those issues if we're going to jump down this other guy's throat for placing somebody in a chokehold?
I agree. And so so one of the things I tweet regularly because, look, if you want to understand the wealth gap, you want to understand why there's so many people struggling, you want to understand why, you know, elderly people are getting priced out of their homes due to rising property taxes and their COLA adjustments aren't quite keeping up with costs of drugs, gas, food, rent, and or property taxes, all of that, you got to go to the headwaters of the Nile and you got to go to the Federal Reserve. So I raise these things and you would think that somebody like AOC who cares about those issues, stripping services, demonizing the poor, people are homeless, crying for food, raising rents, you would think she would be interested in going to the actual headwaters of that story, which would be to criticize the Federal Reserve because they are the singular institution most responsible for creating almost all of that misery. They print money, they give it to their rich friends. End of story, right? And the rich friends buy everything and then rent it back to us. Remember, you'll own nothing and be happy. Who's on the other side of that owning, me owning nothing? Oh, somebody. Oh, that would be the Federal Reserve and its buddies, right? So they never talk about this though, Evie. They never. I can never get any traction to go all the way up to the headwaters in the story. It's so simple. Do you care about rising rents and homelessness and inflation and people not being able to afford the basic necessities, then we have to have a conversation about the Federal Reserve. Full stop.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get no interest in, like, again, cause and effect, like, uh-oh, you lost me on that one, big boy. You know, they just won't have that conversation, but they want to focus all the way down on the final effect, but not the cause. Wow, yeah. Look at all these junky homeless in San Francisco. Can we talk about your policies? No, no. They don't want this. So that's weird. That's the disconnect. So when I say the mind virus, it's like, remember I said, there's some thing that can't get reconnect. There's some missing synapse. There's an air gap here.
Right.
That I can't resolve. Cause I'm like, well, let's figure out this complex thing with all its nuances and talk about it then. But
nope. Right. There's an air gap in the human mind. That's not allowing integrity between all the different segments of thinking.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh my goodness. That gave me a jolt.
Ooh, that would have been fun.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have had a little emergency here. So let's look at this real quick then. So this is from Eric Adams, mayor of New York, said any loss of life is tragic. There's a lot we don't know. So I'm going to refrain from commenting further. However, we do know that there were serious mental health issues in play here. So it's just da-da-da-da-da-da, right? So he's just trying to soften this up. He said not so fast. AOC was just like, said, this feels like a new low. Not being able to clearly condemn a public murder. Again, she doesn't seem to understand what that means. Because the victim was of social status, some would deem too low to care about. The last sentence is especially rich from an administration trying to cut the very services that could have helped him. And he says, and I need all elected officials and advocacy groups to join us in prioritizing getting people the care they need and not just allowing them to languish. All right. Well, yeah. And so guess what? Spoiler alert. The money won't materialize for that. It's always hard when we have, there's lead pipes in Detroit. Oh, God, that could be $40 million. Where could we ever find that?
Is that the Flint, same reason Michigan? Flint doesn't have good water.
Yeah, it's so hard. Where are we going to get it? That's millions of dollars. Oh, hey, Ukraine needs $100 billion. Done. Right, priorities, people. Mm-hmm. Priorities. And by the way, AOC, she just won't let it go. She says, I have yet to hear a real explanation from any official hesitating to condemn the killing of Jordan Neely about what makes condemning this violence so complicated. Killing is wrong. Killing the poor is wrong. Killing the mentally ill is wrong. Why is that so hard to say? Okay. I checked your record. You voted for all the Ukraine money. That went over and killed lots and lots and lots of Ukrainians. Lots. You don't seem to kill. So I thought killing is killing. Killing is wrong. You said it right there. Killing is wrong. Killing is wrong. It's just wrong then. Just wrong. Killing is wrong. Well, actually, no. It's not always wrong. I am very anti-violence. I am very pro-self-defense. The way I reconcile that is I'm not going to go out and aggress on anybody. But if somebody's trying to hurt Evie, killing is sort of well on the table, right? It's just how it is, right? So that makes total sense to me. So this idea is very cartoonish. Killing is wrong, right? If it is, then you have no moral footing and you're a moral hot mess, right? Or, you know, it's more nuanced than that. And I think that's actually the point here. It's actually more nuanced than that.
Somebody asked a question. How can we kick out the idiots from politics and demand a mandatory sanity test for politicians? Pontus Larson asks. I'm sorry, I know there are a lot of good comments. I can't even keep up with everything.
Yeah. how do we kick them out? You could say we could vote them out, but I got to be honest, until you have a voting system which has full audit trail integrity, it's going to be tricky. I'll just leave that at that because that's a non-issue that you're not allowed to talk about in the free and fairest country in the world. At this point on this platform. So there's that. Evie and I, for a while, we said, look, if we had to take people into our compound here, it's like, you know, Mad Max has happened. Like, how would we screen people quickly? And I said, you know, my idea would be to have all 50 people trying to get in chairs. We're facing them just watching. And we put Bill Burr's comedy routine on. And if you can laugh at all the jokes, not just the ones that lampoon the people you wish got lampooned, but get frowny faced about the other ones, then you're in. You got to be able to like just handle the totality of it. So there's a larger conversation to be had here, though, which is that we have a lot of highly damaged people in our culture, and they're wounded. And they're wounded at a very early age, and they're carrying a lot of trauma. And we see that reflected over and over and over again. And by the way, I think we're going to have way more than we ever used to have because of TikTok, social media, these things, a whole generation raised on these things. They're doing much more damage than people understand at this point. I think it's bad.
Oh, I think it's bad too. I have never bonded with mine. I'm not going to be sad when I have to let it go. I don't love my phone. I just don't.
Actually, you kind of hate your phone.
Right? I do. I mean, I'm not saying I don't like technology, period, but
yeah,
it just doesn't grab me.
Yeah. MC says, I saw Bill Burr live. He is good. Yeah, he is. And Bill Burr has a plan too, right? He's got a plan. Just look up cruise ships. It's a plan. I'm not saying it's a good plan, but at least it's a plan.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So just carrying this particular story on just real quick. So, all right, check this out. So I guess I shouldn't expect any different from Marxist 777. So again, saying he was lynched. So they want this inflammatory language, you know, murdered him. So first he was lynched, then he was murdered, which might, I'm not sure Marxist 777 understands what lynch means, but that's fine. On the subway, he started telling passengers that he was fed up being hungry and thirsty. That's it. He was just fed up being hungry and thirsty, threw his jacket on the floor, and that's how he got murdered. But look at this. 82,000 for this is an otherwise small account. 82,000 people are like, yeah. So you can feel there's like a lot of people like, yeah. And of course, we have a grievance industry in this country that just fires this up and loves its grievances. Natalie Wynn wrote, yeah, the sheer number of lynch mob defenders on here is, and by the way, Twitter's a super toxic place. If you ever want to go there and get bummed out about humanity, this is how you do it. Just sharing. And then, so this would be, I guess, the liberal side, and then the conservative side, Damian Carlyle here saying, to be honest, if people can't understand why people would take matters into their own hands when someone is threatening, it makes me think their lives have been so cozy, they haven't been in that kind of situation, which I think is a generous way of putting that, to which Natalie replied, I have felt threatened by unwell people on public transit. I have been verbally abused. I've been masturbated at. But you know what I didn't do to any of those people? Murder them. So there's already, Evie, if you can feel it, there's like that's like a pretty extraordinary sort of like Stockholm syndrome. It's like, you know what? I've already normalized how I go about being masturbated at, verbally abused. You just take it, right? And some people are like, you know what? No, you don't have to take that. You can totally not take that and have a boundary, right? And say, no bueno, sorry. You don't get to do that. So that's where we're at. At any rate, how about this? So what about these deaths, though? So there's all this hyperventilating over Jordan Neely. Mm-hmm. And in 2021, 106,699 people, more males than females, died of drug overdose deaths. I mean, isn't that?
It's awful.
106,000. That's 2,000 a week, almost. It's extraordinary. Every one of those is a tragedy. Every one of them. I have heard nothing from these people, nothing from AOC about this. This is 2,000 a week.
Mm-hmm.
7 into 2,000. It's you know, 300 a day.
Yeah.
This is no bueno. This is very bad, right? Where's the outrage, right?
And this was before this.
Yeah.
That you were talking about, right?
Yeah, but before
this is before the this.
Before the that.
And so this isn't taking into account those excess deaths that are directly related to big pharma. So that's what I imagine this is.
Yeah.
That
chart right there is a hole up. Blow the whistle, time out. Can we have a good, you know, solid understanding of what's going on here and why, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. But speaking of what you said, Evie, where's the concern over this massive tragedy, right? This is a 40% spike in working age people between these 2 years, right? And Ed Dowd, in Cause Unknown, the epidemic of sudden deaths, he has an idea of what it is. And this 40% spike in deaths among young people, working age adults, was determined using the actuarial information utilized by insurance companies.
Mm-hmm. Seriously. Somebody said,
that's a tragedy.
Yeah, no, that is a tragedy. And that's something we could actually keep talking about, depending on how long we're staying on here. Somebody said 106,699 seems way low. Herb Green said that.
You mean just for just
that number that you originally had of the number of overdose deaths? It seems like it should be higher, sadly.
Well, let's look at it real quick. Includes deaths with underlying causes of unintentional drug poisoning, codes X40 to X44, suicide drug poisoning, X60 to 64, homicide drug poisoning, X85, or drug poisoning of undetermined intent, that's a Y10 to Y14, as coded in the, you know, ICD-10 codes here. So
I'm sure it's higher than that, and it's probably not recorded every
These are overdose deaths. These aren't, so there's a lot of other deaths that aren't overdose that come from drugs.
Oh, drug issues.
Drug interactions, side effects, right. Those aren't included. These are overdose deaths only.
Okay.
Just overdose.
Gotcha.
Yep. By the way, just for fun, I'm loving ChatGPT. So ChatGPT is rapidly becoming my lawyer, my accountant, my search engine, things like that. And so Google's time is up. And I'm really glad about that, because when I was searching for this term, excess deaths, US 2020, 2021, 2022, Ed Dowd, look what pops up. First three. Evidence shows that these things don't increase the... No evidence. Excess deaths linked to these things. Contrary. COVID-19 things, these things did not cause. What do you mean did not cause? What do you...
Oh my gosh. Don't you love that? I was trying to look up.
You can't say that. Like you could say have not yet been definitively linked, but look at that. Did not cause.
No evidence. Jeez.
Anyway, that's why this is why I hate Google now. It's like I have to fight past their state-approved narrative, and dare I say it, you know, totalitarian, outside-in, mm-hmm. progressive, utopian, authoritarian framing on stuff. It's just a bunch of crap.
No, it's getting really bad. I find a lot of things aren't on here that I would expect are on there.
Mm-hmm.
And they've already just sort of mapped out the narrative and decided that this is okay, this is not okay. I mean, we're not just living in a place where you get a strike if you say something you shouldn't on a show like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's preconceived what you're allowed to think about and what you're allowed to research, which I
know.
Think is insane. But I don't know that ChatGPT is honestly going to be that much better depending on how they created that. Thing,
well,
you know?
As we're seeing here, it has a socialist bias in the chat over here. It does. So this is going to be a longer conversation. We should have a whole show on this at some point, because yes, ChatGPT is AI, which has been fundamentally coded by humans. So in theory, that bounds what it's capable of. And it's been given a data set also concocted by humans, also frozen in time. So that theoretically bounds what it can do.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is we're not seeing it doing those things. It's creating things that clearly are emergent behaviors. And emergent behaviors are just things that pop out. Like the fractals, there's an initial condition and then things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's doing things that nobody foresaw, nobody coded. It's
like
just
what?
Well, you watch all these new little agents popping out and how people are using it, and you can trick it to it's a neural network, right? It's out there fishing around for patterns and doing a linguistic neural net approach, which is, and as far as I understand it, but it's not like I tell it like how to follow this path, do this. It follows its own path over time.
Right.
And so it's actually starting to code things to improve itself. And we're seeing every day there's another tool that comes out that I hadn't anticipated. So whole other conversation.
I know there's so many great like cul-de-sacs we could kind of go off into. It's
I know,
hard not to.
I know.
Like,
I know.
And I could go into talking about all sorts of topics here. I'm
so
sure you could too.
We are coming up on our time, but I just wanted to. So that's the thesis for today, very quickly, which is that there is this vast difference, and for people who start on the liberal side, who are sort of from the outside in. I think they think that they're going to be able to top down this, right? So if we could just elect the right person, and if everybody would just not question the CDC, and if we could just have absolutely the right laws passed, and if we could just make sure that, you know, everybody, you know, was on this new digital currency, it's this idea that you can enforce your utopian vision from the outside in, but to the extent that runs afoul of the code, you're not going to ever turn the delta into a series of cubes. Mm-hmm. You could for a few minutes, but it'll revert, right? So you have to understand human nature and where things go. And I'm very worried that there are people out there who are just thinking that they can legislate some better utopia without understanding human nature, without accounting for it. Human nature has not changed. Unfortunately, we have not evolved at all in the last 5,000 years. And we can go back through 5,000 years of history and understand how it is that humans behave. Mm. And if you don't start with that native, here's how humans behave, show me the incentive, I'll show you the outcome. Never expect a man to understand something when his salary requires him not to. That was true 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, and it was true yesterday. It will also be true next week, right? Mm-hmm. It's just how it is. So that's my big concern is that we have a lot of these folks out here who are world improvers. They're erstwhile. They care. They don't want to see anybody ever hurt. They just don't understand how prosperity is developed, where things come from, how it actually works. And fundamentally, I do believe that it's our individual right. And it's our right, not a privilege, not even our duty, but it is our right to defend ourselves. That's the ultimate right. If you don't have that right, nothing else matters, right? And by defend ourselves, I don't mean from a crazy dude on a subway necessarily. I mean that. But I mean from a doctor who in a hospital system who's going to kill you, because that's what we saw happen over and over again. The horror stories that I heard down at this most recent FLCC gathering were terrifying. People were murdered in hospitals. I mean, by you're like murdered, that's intent. So I'm going to use that word carefully, because you can look at the charts of some people and discover that they were strapped to a bed and given no food or water for 9 days until they expired. If you're in the medical system and you don't understand what not giving food and water is, then we have another problem, but you clearly do. So that gives you intent. Because if I strapped a chicken down and gave it no food or water for 9 days, I'm intending to kill that thing, right? So at any rate, we've seen a lot of that. So what are you looking up, Evie?
Oh, I was just looking up what I wanted to share before we head out for the day. Is that time right now?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let me get this out of the way for a second.
All right, very quickly, Pontus Larson, thank you for your time. Good night. Hey, good night. Good night, Mrs. Larson, Pontus, whatever that is.
All right, I've got two things. Couldn't decide between them, so I'll share them each. This one's by Ralph Waldo Emerson, and it's a quote of his that says, "Whatever you do, you need courage. Whatever course you decide upon, there is always someone to tell you that you are wrong. There are always difficulties arising that tempt you to believe that your critics are right. To map out a course of action and follow it to an end requires some of the same courage that a soldier needs. Peace has its victories, but it takes brave men and women to win them."
Courage. Courage is contagious, too.
Indeed it is.
It can be.
And this is the other one that I have. That's by one of my favorite poets. Is this woman named Mary Oliver. And this is one of her poems called "My Work is Loving the World." "My work is loving the world. Here the sunflowers, there the hummingbird, equal seekers of sweetness. Here the quickening yeast, there the blue plums, here the clam deep in the speckled sand. Are my boots old? Is my coat torn? Am I no longer young and still not half perfect? Let me keep my mind on what matters, which is my work, which is mostly standing still and learning to be astonished. The Phoebe, the delphinium, the sheep in the pasture, and the pasture, which is mostly rejoicing, since all ingredients are here, which is gratitude to be given a mind and a heart and these body clothes, a mouth with which to give shouts of joy to the moth and the wren, to the sleepy dug-up clam, telling them all over and over how it is that we live forever."
Mm.
So I thought you might enjoy those.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I did. I hope other people did too. So
do as well.
Well, thank you, everybody, for being here and being here with us on this beautiful Sunday. I'm going to go out and start doing work back on the farm. It is work season here, and I love getting outside and working. So
we're going to go get busy in the garden.
Get busy in the garden. I got things to repair. I got a field that I'm not happy with. I got to figure out how to make it happier so I'm happy, and on and on. So with that, thank you, everybody, for being here with us today. Tell us again, any comments down below, what you would like us to talk about. Mm-hmm. It's been wonderful being here with you. For all of you who I will see over at Peak Prosperity, remember, I do daily takes over there. They've been very popular, and they're a lot of fun to write and all of that. So tons of content at Peak Prosperity all the time. Come on by, check that out anytime you want, and love to have you there. We love expanding our tribe. Trust me, you're going to need your tribe around you over the next few years. And also remember to hit like, hit subscribe, all of that stuff. It helps the algorithms. And because I asked you to, I threw a because statement in there just for fun. All right. Thank you very much. And we'll see you next time.
Good night.